telling you this to protect you. Emerson went on. Don't want some liar and criminal living in my house, endangering you.
Criminal? I asked, only half wanting to know the answer, curiosity like a burn in my throat.
Turns out your friend has itchy fingers.
Emerson leaned against the counter, slowly sipping his water.
Robbed a few people down in Texas. My sources say he gave the money away, like he thought he was Robin Hood or something. Almost got caught, so he changed his name and came up here. No romantic dreams and wanderlust like he told you. Came up here to escape his crimes.
That part didn't bother me one bit. What did bother me was that Tobias hadn't told me all this himself. Tobias had already told me about his history with robbing. Why not tell me where he was actually from?
He escaped the draft by enrolling in college for a bit. He wants everything equal, except for him. College boy not having to go to Nam.
Emerson chuckled like this was funny. The room felt like it was undulating. Sunlight brightened the walls and then dimmed, clouds hurrying across the sky. I needed to sit down, but there were no chairs nearby, so I leaned forward against the island and pressed my hands down on the marble surface.
How'd you find this out? I asked.
Hired an investigator.
Doesn't mean it's true, I said.
Emerson pulled a photograph out of his pocket and set it on the island. The photograph showed Tobias sandwiched between two older people in front of a large Victorian house.
My guy got this from his parents. They were real curious about where he ended up, Emerson said.
My skin went clammy and my heart raced. Moments with Tobias flashed through my mind. Us raking leaves that had fallen from the large maple. Him chasing me through the woods until we sprawled on the forest floor, the scent of decaying wood and new growth aromatic and thick around us. Why was Tobias pretending to be poor? He did have money, or at least his family did. He didn't need to steal from Emerson. He wanted to, because he had some other hunger that money couldn't satisfy.
Tobias didn't just want to belong. He wanted to be someone else, and that's what I gave to him.
A chance to be the hometown boy with not enough money in his pocket, the chance to work with his hands and never get to see the harvest. The kind of work that involved soot or grease or oil. The house with broken door hinges so anything could get in. The chance to smell like a chimney but never feel warm, the cold draft always making its way in.
You both need to get out of my house, Emerson said, his voice sounding as if it were coming from far away. I'm turning it into a hunting lodge. Good amount of waterfowl and deer around there.
The room blurred. Emerson's crystal glass shone like a star, the light spreading from it in rays.
Get out? I asked quietly.
I'll give you 5 days. I'm traveling this weekend. And if you're not out by the time I'm back, you'll be thrown out.
No, I said, stepping closer to Emerson, the marble island still between us.
Emerson set his glass down with a thud.
You think this is easy for me? All the responsibility I have, all the decisions I have to make? I always was glad you weren't my daughter.
He picked up the glass and walked around the island toward me. I wanted to back up, but I didn't want to give him my ground.
Me too, I said.
I tried to duck when I saw Emerson's hand swipe toward me, but I was too late. The glass caught my temple in a crack, and I toppled to the ground. My vision blurred, and I listened to Emerson's footsteps as he walked away. I blinked to clear my head and slowly pulled myself up. I stumbled through the house, my hands out to my side, catching myself against the walls and furniture, my eyesight not yet cleared. When I made it out to my car, I saw Emerson in the window, watching me with a placid expression.
I stumbled into my house with stained clothes, matted hair, and a face sticky with blood. My head throbbed, and I stuck it under the kitchen faucet. Wincing, I rinsed the wound. Tobias saw me and leapt from the couch. His hands shook on my shoulders. "I'm going to kill him," Tobias said quietly, brushing my bloody hair from the wound with such gentleness that I held my breath and listened to the running water. A knot hardened in my stomach. I didn't want Tobias to kill him. That felt like making a bed with a too small quilt. The edges didn't meet up. I closed my eyes, relaxing in the sensation of Tobias's hands on my skin. How delicate they felt. I basked in the smell of him, a warm, woody scent that clouded my mind. No matter what Tobias had and hadn't told me, he still was the only person who had treated me well. "You don't have to," I said, pushing myself up from the sink and pulling Tobias's hands away. "We're going to rob him and get out of here." Relief crossed his face. "Let me get a bandage for that." "Wait," I said, holding a kitchen towel to stem the bleeding from my temple. I told him everything Emerson had told me.
"He what?"
Tobias slammed his palm down on the kitchen table.
"He sent someone to my parents?"
He turned in a circle and squeezed his scalp with both hands.
"What an asshole."
"You lied," I said. Lips pressed tight, Tobias looked at me.
"None of that matters."
Biting my lip, I blotted my cup with the towel. "It matters to me. I want to know the real you."
"You do know the real me. I was a kid born into a world with values I don't believe in."
"Who doesn't feel that way? It doesn't earn you the right to lie to me." Tobias's eyes drifted over the shabby living room, as if looking for answers from the torn sofa and broken side table. I tossed the bloody towel on the counter and crossed my arms. I could feel him resisting me, but I held my ground on this. Tobias ran a hand over his face. "You dodged the draft," I said. His eyes darkened, and he looked down again.
"I feel bad about that. Every day. Feel bad about not doing my part. Feel bad that we are even in this war. But, Sinead, I couldn't go."
Wind howled outside, picking up speed, sending the trees into a flurry of motion. Leaves flew and swirled.
"I'm ashamed, okay? Ashamed of where I come from. Everyone's lives are built on things they haven't earned. It's the most unfair thing in the world."
"No reason to be ashamed of what you've been given," I said quietly. Tobias took my hand.
"I'll answer any question you want, I promise. But right now, I want to get ice on that cut because it's already swelling half your face."
The next day, we took a walk through the woods. Violets grew along the roots of trees near flowering dogwood. Tobias looked like a child under the towering branches. Perhaps it was a burden to start at the top of the ladder with all that energy. No real place to climb. I asked Tobias if he missed his parents.
"Sometimes. But I don't miss pretending to be someone I wasn't when I was with them."
"Did you really rob rich people and give it to the poor?" I asked. The chilly morning air cut through my thin coat and I rubbed my arms. Tobias grinned ruefully.
"I did. Not exactly proud of it, but not ashamed either. First person I robbed was my dad's business partner. I'd just been reading in the newspaper about people struggling for basic things and thought, this is bullshit. I didn't know how to distribute it, though, so I gave it to a soup kitchen. By the third robbery, the police brought me into the station for an interview. No arrest, but I knew it was coming. My dad hired me a big-shot lawyer, and I figured I better split."
"But why? Why steal in the first place when you didn't need it?" Tobias's face tightened.
"Found out my dad had another family in another state. Hid it from us, and I just
felt. Felt it was all so fake. I couldn't play by those rules anymore.
Tobias, I said gently. I'm sorry. I reached for him, but he shrugged away from me. A flock of birds shot from the trees and scattered across the sky. Tobias kicked a clod of dirt. I guarded his silence with my own, and minutes passed before he spoke again.
My dad, he was so complacent about everything in the world. The war, this recession. So long as he was comfortable and everything looked good. People who don't have everything know what fear is. It makes them more alive.
I frowned, thinking he was wrong.
Emerson knew what fear was. He had so much to lose, and he let it out on us, bit by bit, like doling bad medicine out to a child. Debt payment.
I don't think it's fear that makes you alive, I said.
Then what is it?
I looked up at the canopy of branches above us. They blotted out the sun, and we stood in dappled shade. I twirled, arms outstretched and head back. When I stopped, Tobias reached for my hand. Once, when I was 7, I waded ankle deep in a creek until I saw a crawdad scuttle under a rock, I said. It scared me, but I wanted to get closer. I wanted to lift that rock and hold that small, strange thing in my hand. I told Tobias how I'd stood in that cold water until finally I crept toward it and caught it. It squirmed in my grip, and its claws had a green cast to them. Its tiny black eyes bulged from its head, and its antennae quivered. As its small legs thrashed the air, I felt how lightweight it was under that hard skeleton. I felt alive then, I said to Tobias. And the fear was just something extra. It's not even about the thing itself. The liveness was going for what I wanted.
Tobias pulled me close and kissed me. I pinched his side and he howled and I laughed. Darting over a fallen log, I started running through the woods. Tobias chased me. You better be ready when I catch you. Buttons on the ground.
Phrases he hollered vanished among the leaves. He caught me at the bank of the creek and we tumbled to the ground. The cold dirt on my back and the warmth of his body divided me in two. Made me mildly delirious. Twigs snapped under us, and a rock dug into my shoulder blade, and his breath was hot on my neck. Afterward, grass itched my cheek as we lay tucked against each other. My mother had once told me, "Don't let your future be a horse that leaps a fence to run nowhere, honey." Maybe that's just what home is for. I said out loud to the clouds.
What?
Tobias asked. To have a place so you can leave it. Tobias stroked my cheek with his thumb.
We're going to make a real home together, one neither of us will want to leave.
Chapter 5. On Saturday morning, Tobias and I pulled up to Emerson's house with several empty bags in the bed of Tobias's beat-up truck. It was a colonial with navy blue shutters and poplars growing on each side. It always looked flat and ominous, the kind of house that watches you rather than welcoming you in. I was all nerves as I unlocked the front door. The gash on my temple throbbed, and the flesh around it bulged black and blue. Even turning my head from side to side felt tender. I led Tobias down the shining wood hallway toward Emerson's den. We passed through the living room first. The silence was almost as unsettling as the order of each of the rooms, with everything always kept in its perfect place. The leather sofas, the fresh-cut roses on redwood tables, the long dining room table that was never used. Emerson often played Mozart on the piano in the evenings. If I had scissors, I'd have cut the strings. Instead, I knocked a miniature globe off the coffee table. Its thud resounded through the house.
You okay?
Tobias asked, setting a hand on my shoulder. I nodded,
and led him to the den, a large oak-paneled room with a giant desk in the middle. Shelves on the back wall held three-ring binders and file cabinets. The safe sat behind the desk, tucked into the wall and hidden by a fake cabinet door. Tobias pulled the revolver from the back of his jeans and set it on Emerson's desk. The sound of metal on wood lingered in the room.
I don't like having this thing on me.
Tobias stepped away from the gun like it was a live animal. I studied his face. His long blonde hair hung loose and wavy on either side of his face, and he looked tired, even haggard. He tried so hard, put so much effort into being who he wanted to be. I knelt beside the safe and spun the dial. My chest felt heavy, and the tips of my fingers tingled. The dial spun and paused and reversed until the safe unlocked with the thud of metal against metal. Tobias knelt beside me, and we loaded the stacks of bills into our bags, a duffel bag, an old suitcase with a broken wheel, and a velvet carpet bag that had belonged to my grandmother.
If you carry this out to the car, Tobias said as he handed me several bags, I'll get the rest and meet you there.
Okay. I didn't move. Tobias grasped my forearm.
Hey, we're going to be okay.
He raised my chin with his finger and kissed me. Silence cloaked me, a heavy curtain enveloping my body. The hardwood floor shone brightly, and sunlight caught dust particles and lit them up, sparkling and falling like stars shredded and left a drop in the atmosphere. I stayed crouched beside him, the door of the safe hanging open, that metal smell wild as earth. We should never have come here. We should be out on the road right now, putting miles between us and this place. Let's just leave without the money, I said. I stood up. We didn't have a minute to lose.
Sinead, we're already here. Come on,
Tobias said. He tried to hand me the bags, but I stepped back. We don't need it, I said. A grandfather clock chimed. The metallic sound hung in the air between us.
Sinead,
Tobias whispered, pushing the bags toward me. I took them, but stopped in the doorway and looked back at him. His face was tilted up at me, and the soft light made him look tender.
I love you,
he said quietly. A pressure swelled inside my ribcage. I love you too, I said. I carried the bags down the hallway. My own footsteps sounded faint and far away. I passed the living room with the open staircase and walked into a hallway that opened to the entryway and front door. Outside, I loaded the bags in the bed of the truck. Leaning against the truck, I waited for Tobias. Dusk made it hard to see until my eyes adjusted. An owl hooted from a line of cottonwoods to the south. I peered in that direction, and my breath quickened. A quarter mile away, between the cottonwood trunks, I could see blue metal, Emerson's sedan parked by the side of the road. I ran back to the house to warn Tobias. Lurching into the foyer, I stumbled over a rug.
You planning on shooting me, motherfucker?
It was Emerson's voice, coming from the den. His voice was thin and low, a wire stretched taut. He must have slipped around the back of the house when I was loading the bags. Before Tobias answered, Emerson said,
Who helped you? Sinead here? She help you get in?
My mind went empty, and I stood frozen in place.
She's not here. It's just me,
Tobias said in a raised voice. He was giving me a way out, telling me to save myself, but I didn't move.
Lying motherfucker.
Emerson said. There was a sound of furniture slamming against the wall and small objects falling to the floor. I remembered that night in the dance hall, the look on Tobias's face when he spun me, the way he'd dip his head in mock shyness when I asked him a question. How after my mother's death, he sat with me in silence, looking out the window at the pines, as though he could sense that I didn't want him to say anything. Just needed him close to me. All my life, I had never done much beyond what I'd been told to do. But I wasn't going to obey anymore. I wasn't going to abandon Tobias because he thought I should. I dropped the bags and ran toward the den. My mother watched from her portrait on the wall. The hallway was an unending tunnel. A gunshot. Something tumbled to the floor. I burst into the den, hands out against the doorframe to steady myself from toppling to the floor. Tobias lay on the ground, blood pooling from his head. That blood'll stain the wood, was the first thing I thought, as though if I figured out how to clean up, none of it would be real. Then I went all blank inside, except for this feeling that Tobias was still in the room with me. Emerson stepped around Tobias's body and grabbed one of the bags. It was still unzipped, and a few stacks of bills fell out onto the floor. I kept watching him, not quite believing he was there. I looked back at Tobias, half expecting him to wake up and grin in his boyish way and ask me to grab a towel for his head. Tobias and I are here. We are the only ones. My mind kept trying to change the world. Emerson stacked the bills back in the safe, unzipped another bag, and stacked those bills back in the safe, too. He did it slowly and gently, arranging the bills in neat rows.
Is some of it already out in the truck?
Emerson asked. I nodded.
We'll get the rest later.
In a haze, I wondered why he was hiding the evidence of our robbery. Why wasn't he reaching for the phone and calling the police? When Emerson finished putting back the bills, he stood and said,
Well, help me.
He gestured toward Tobias's body with the gun.
You made this mess. You'll clean it up.
He jerked the gun up to my chest. Chapter 6. My shock was giving way to panic. A low thrum in my ears, as though the bullet had lodged in my brain and now my skull held onto the echo.
Help me pick him up.
Emerson knelt near Tobias's shoulders and gestured to his feet. The haze in my mind cleared, and a new swell of fear rose up my spine as I realized what Emerson wanted to do. He didn't want to report what had happened. He didn't need an investigation and a court case while he was negotiating a major contract for the new factory. Better to get rid of the mess and move on. Sobs gathered in my throat and I tried to swallow them, only to spit out a choking sound. Emerson glared at me.
Now,
Emerson commanded. Tobias's head was turned to the side. His hands were open, one at his side, and one up next to his face, but I imagined them clenched as fists, imagined the fighting spirit Tobias could never lose. My eyes met Emerson's. He thought I was a scared child with an empty mind. If I was good at one thing, it was biding my time. I knelt at Tobias's feet and lifted him at the ankles while Emerson lifted Tobias beneath the shoulders. He was heavier than I expected, his body unwieldy, and we struggled and stumbled down the hallway. I started to feel heat everywhere in my body, sweat pouring down my back, a burn in my throat, as if I were becoming a single flame. I kept pushing against the emotion building up in me, pushing it deep within me, and it returned to my surfaces like fire. We loaded Tobias in the back of his truck. Emerson told me to get a shovel out of the garage and place it next to the body in the truck bed. I obeyed. The night was calm and peaceful, stars just beginning to unveil from darkness. Emerson found the keys in Tobias's pocket and started the engine. His movements were something both alien and familiar, as though I were watching him from a great distance and couldn't remember whether he was someone I knew or not. We climbed in the truck and Emerson pulled onto the country highway that ran on the western outskirts of town. Bluffs lined the highway, autumn grass dry and brittle, blowing in the wind above the sandy soil.
Thought I was gone, eh?
Emerson asked. When I said nothing, Emerson shook his head.
I decided against it after we had our tiff. Figured you might do something stupid. Your mother would always do something stupid when she was upset, too. Parked my car ways back when I saw you two were at the house. Didn't want you hearing my tires on the drive.
We passed Brecken and turned down the gravel road that led to my house. The land dropped away into a valley along the side of the road, and we drove over a small bridge, Longtail Creek running slow and steady beneath us. It was so dark the pines on either side of the road stood black and formless. I was thinking about Tobias in the back, his hair blowing in the wind, his skin pale in the moonlight. I wanted to crawl back there and lie next to him. Emerson parked a mile from my house on a forested bluff that overlooked the valley and creek. My hands shook as I opened the truck door. When Emerson got out of the truck, he tucked my revolver in the back of his pants. We carried Tobias into the forest, the shovel balanced lengthwise on his body. Pine limbs scratched my face and arms. Needles lay thick under my feet. An owl took flight from an overhead branch, sending the leaves swinging and swaying. We stopped a half mile into the forest. A small clearing spread around us, almost circular, and moonlight filtered through the leaves and gave Tobias a silver hue. We set him gently on the ground, and the shovel slid off him to the dirt. Emerson pulled the revolver from the back of his pants and gestured at Tobias's body. "Dig," he said. I looked down at the shovel and back up at Emerson. Fear tasted like metal in my mouth. "Should I dig a grave?" My voice faltered. I couldn't say, "For both of us?" Emerson gazed at me with understanding and gestured with the gun again.
"You've almost been like a daughter to me," he said grimly. "Almost. Just dig."
The shovel cut the sandy soil easily, but I tired quickly all the same. My bones started to ache in the cold, and my hands could barely grasp the shovel. Emerson sat against the trunk of a dead pine with no branches, watching me and waiting. Starlight etched the tree trunk's texture to a series of small cuts. Several hours later, it was 4 feet deep, and Emerson said it was enough.
"Toss him in."
"Not deep enough," I said. Sweat poured down my neck and back. Blisters broke and blood oozed on my palms, and I gripped the shovel tighter, staining the wood. I raised the shovel and pushed it into the earth. Pain sprang up in my arms and shoulders. I wanted to stay in the hole for a few more minutes. I liked being down in the ground, the earth slippery and pungent, the darkness blotting out my thoughts.
"Get out. I said it's enough," Emerson said.
He stood up and walked over to the hole. He was all I could see. He reached a hand down and pulled me up. I knelt beside Tobias and touched his arm and jumped at how he felt warmer than my own hands, as if being gone would be a sudden thing. I should have known better. All my insides dissolved within me, went liquid and poured out of me until I was empty. Empty as the silver clearing. Empty as the surface of a planet no one has ever been to. "Tobias," I whispered. His skin was taking on the color of ash.
"Get on with it," Emerson said.
He waved the gun from me to the grave. I put my hands under Tobias's back to roll him into the grave. I gritted my teeth and dropped my head. I didn't want his body tumbling along in the dirt, flopping over like a fish out of water. Emerson cocked the gun.
"You're not getting away with this. You'll learn a lesson in all this. Best thing for you is doing as you're told."
I raised my hand slowly and stood. I moved to Tobias's feet and grabbed his ankles. I dragged him several feet to the grave, panting and pulling against his weight, his body unpliable and resistant. A small animal rustled in a bush behind me, At the edge of the grave, I knelt and rolled him once, his body hitting the ground with a thump. All was silent for a moment.
"Don't have all night," Emerson said.
I grabbed the shovel and pushed loose dirt into the grave. The earth smelled cold and rotten now, like an upturned fallen log, everything wet and dark on the underside.
"I just wanted to love you all these years, you and your mother."
Emerson shook his head and looked at me sidelong.
"Always ungrateful. Always. And after all I've given you, could have left you hungry."
I thought of hunger, of Tobias's hunger. So many kinds of hunger. I thought of all Emerson had taken and given to my mother and me. The house, the diner, money for clothes and food, especially in the winter, which always seemed unending. New tires on the car, never taking no for an answer, even if we told him we'd figure it out. Generous, my mother would say about him. I couldn't argue with that word. Look at all the need we had. And in return, we always had to give our ground, always stepping back, making more room for him to take. Once, when I was 12 years old, Emerson beat my mother so bad she couldn't work for a week. He had visited her at the hospital and had stood over her bed saying, "You just need to let me love you." On the ride home from the hospital, he had told me how lonely he was, how no one in this world had been willing to stand by him. In those days, I spent a lot of time imagining that I could stop him. Stop him at the door, two hands on his chest, pushing him backwards onto the front step. Stop his hand before it reached my face, my own hand catching his wrist. These fantasies started with being someone else, and they ended there too. Emerson stood at the edge of the clearing and looked at me sideways, almost sheepishly, like he was embarrassed.
"I always wanted my own baby to love," he said.
He looked so small in the forest. He pulled at the collar of his shirt, a gesture that meant he felt vulnerable. I planted the shovel in the ground and wiped my hands on my jeans, waiting on him, waiting for his next move. I wanted to be ready this time. The trees cast black silhouettes, one after another, a retreating series of shadows. I had been shaking for so long that now everything felt eerily still. He just watched me, so I finally asked, "What now?"
"Now, you come home with me," he said. A cold knot hardened in my stomach. Space around me tightened, as though the darkness were pressing closer.
He turned and began walking toward the car, the gun still in his hand, but limp at his side. Like a snake, relaxed until it coils and strikes in less than a second. "No," I whispered. Emerson looked back at me over his shoulder.
"What?"
"No." He turned toward me. I took two giant steps forward, raised the shovel, and swung. The lip of the shovel cracked his head at the temple. He fell to the ground almost soundlessly, the ring of metal on bone vibrating in my ears. He heaved several times as though gasping for breath. His eyes rolled back in his head. I stood over him, waiting. Then he was still. He lay on his side and almost looked like a child. He was someone's child. Made sense he could look that way. I waited to feel bad, but the feeling didn't come. The pines towered over us and their shadows engulfed him, and he was like a wisp of smoke after a candle is blown out. Chapter 7. 40 Years Later. I ended up near Boundary Waters, close to the border between Minnesota and Canada. I live alone in a small cabin, not unlike the small house I grew up in. It's just me here, the dainty, petite murderess. Just me with the lace curtains and hands permanently darkened with soot because it's so cold up here and I always keep my fire burning. A small price for freedom. The night I killed Emerson, I returned to the house and stole the rest of his money again. I worked and saved more until I could buy some land. After I bought my 10 acres, I built this cabin and squirreled my money away in tin canisters. I run a small campsite on my land and rent out space to campers and travelers, people who want to go somewhere lonely and be in the midst of something larger than themselves. They always look so awestruck with green thick around them, dense with insects and bird call. A young woman, Melanie, helps me with my business. Sometimes I think of how she works for me the way I once worked for Emerson, and it feels strange to ask someone to do something and see them do it. I feel cautious around her, even a bit nervous at times, and I almost understand Emerson's vulnerability. I thought leaving Brecken and killing him would be the end of my being dependent on people. I smile at that thought now. Arthritis sends pain from my hands up my arm, and I almost drop the log on the hearth. Melanie looks up at me from the desk where she works. I give her a shaky, reassuring grin. After 8 years, this is her last day of work. I think the police looked for me for a while, but I'd changed my name once I got here and left no trail from Nebraska to this place. I had read in a newspaper how they found Tobias's body and sent it back to his parents in Texas, and there were reports of me being missing. But it didn't take long for the whole thing to be buried and forgotten. In those early days, after Tobias was killed, I often thought of him lying in the cold earth. I remember trying to make it real in my mind that he wouldn't come home, but images of him kept coming up, saying, "This has happened. It will happen again." I'd wake in the morning to the sound of his voice, thinking he had spoken my name. My age feels like more years than I've lived, and I no longer have the face Tobias loved. But I do have a place entirely my own. If I'm ashamed of anything, it isn't the murder. It was something that had to be done, and I don't feel too sore about it. It's that I needed Tobias to get started on changing. But then, I suppose he needed me too. He was so aimless without me, like a fire that could burn on air alone, leaving no ashes behind, no mark. But in me, he had left his ashes, and I carried them gladly. Sometimes at night, I want to lean close to his ear and tell him, "I got out, Tobias. I did what I never believed I could do." Melanie asks me a question about scheduling campers for next month. I answer her and ask, "You already have a place to stay close to your new job?" "I'll be living in one of the cabins on the park," she tells me. Her new job is working on forest preservation in a national park. Over these last few months, she has chatted about the new town she is moving to and this new role. At the end of the day, I take my savings out of a jar above the stove. I bundle it quickly, surreptitiously. She catches me doing it, the expression on her face the same I used to have when I saw money, like it was some foreign, unattainable object that promised everything in its mysterious way. I push it into an envelope and press it into her hand. She hugs me and thanks me. "I know they want you to live on the grounds, but if you can, try not to live where you work. Scatter what you have so when someone takes something from you, you can't lose it all at once," I tell her. She is only half listening to me. She thinks she has it all figured out. And that's good. It will get her further in the beginning. And by then, once she's fallen, she'll have gotten too far to turn back. So she'll have to keep on her way. She leaves, and I know I won't see her again. After she's gone, I step out the door, stand on my front porch, and lean against the railing. Leaves lie bright and heavy on the ground. Tall grass between the trees flickers in the wind like fire.
Wilderness stretches for miles beyond, trees falling and growing, enough space to disappear in. Sometimes, even after all these years, I listen for Tobias, for his footsteps coming down the hallway, for his truck tires on the gravel drive. Late at night, I speak to him. I tell him that losing him was my becoming, that loving and losing him was the dark magic that bent me into a new shape, made me a creature able to break loose. Tobias, taken from me. Me, living on a tilted world. Emerson gave me that, and I gave him the ground.
This has been an Audible original, produced by Audible Originals, written by Cassandra Montag, performed by Hilary Huber. Executive producers, Laura Blackman and Kat Lambrix. Acquisition and development, Joanne Peretz. Vice President of Audible Studios, Mike Charzik. Editor-in-Chief, Audible Original Publishing, David Blum. Copyright 2020 by Cassandra Montag. Sound recording copyright 2020 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.